Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today I am excited to bring you guys a guest from an industry that I've been looking to speak with for a while. As you guys might have heard me say before, I've wanted to interview a venture capital investor for a while for various reasons, as you guys know. And we luckily have one that we get to speak with today. He is not from the US. He is from the UK. So it'd be interesting to get his take on the venture capital industry in Europe, and to get information on his thoughts about the processes that are going on with the energy crisis in Europe as well. So I'd like to bring you guys the founder of Thesis Capital, Ron Baer. How are you doing, Ron?
Good. I'm really good. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it. And I want to stress that probably 70, 80% of my business is in the US. So I'm quite tapped into the US market as well. I've listed in the past 3 years, three companies on NASDAQ. So I'm quite in tune with the US markets and what's going on, you know, domestically for you guys back in the States.
Well, that is great. That's great news to hear as well. So real quick then, give me a little bit about your background and how you got into becoming a venture capitalist yourself.
Sure, definitely. So my background is I'm Canadian, born and raised in Toronto, grew up in Canada, been in the UK for about 22 years now. I studied in my first degree accounting, and then I did an MBA at the University of Cambridge here in the UK, studied business administration, a master's degree. And, you know, I got in the markets, you know, you meet a lot of people in life and they say they always knew what they wanted to do. You know, when I was 16 in high school, there was a stock market competition for high school students where we're talking now, Andre, before the internet days, you know, there was no internet. Okay, this is like early days. They didn't even have pagers then. And so this is like early days. There was a stock market challenge. It was a nationwide challenge. It was put on by TD Bank, who you guys know in America as TD Ameritrade, you know, it's a big one of Canada's biggest banks. And they put it on with a newspaper called The Globe and Mail, which is a national paper. It's like New York Times or LA Times in the US. Mm-hmm. And it was a stock market challenge where they gave high school students a fictitious $50,000 trading portfolio, and you had to grow it over 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I just grew my portfolio. I started taking huge bets and risks, you know, investing in options and futures, commodities, everything. And I was hooked. And, you know, I did really well. And then my grandfather gave me money to invest, and my father gave me his IRA to invest in for him. And, you know, from there, it just propelled. I always knew that's what I wanted to do. And then when the time was right and I had the opportunity, at first I started out working for guys that are venture capitalists, and I would go into companies and sort of be their guy in the company. And then I'd say 20 years ago, when I was in my, you know, mid-20s, I went out on my own and started small, did one deal and then made a little bit of money, did two deals. And, you know, it's almost like the snowball effect, you know, you make money on one deal. And then you do two, and then you do four, and then you multiply. And so I've been involved in probably 50 transactions, taken dozens of companies public, you know, raised hundreds of millions of dollars. Some of the deals have been huge successes. I've had a few really big exits, and some of them have been, you know, catastrophic failures. And, you know, you learn from failures too. And, you know, it's okay to fail. I tell that to people always. You know, if everything was a success, you wouldn't appreciate it and you wouldn't respect it as well.
I agree with that 100%. If you can go back and said you started this at 16?
Yeah, I started at 16. I started investing in the markets, not venture capital space. I started in the VC space in my mid-20s.
Yeah, but that's interesting that you started even thinking about investing at 16, right? So you kind of had your mindset in the right place.
I'll tell you what, my friends were reading Sports Illustrated and Playboy, and I was reading, you know, Northern Miner and the Financial Post and The Economist. So it was, you know, it was my mind after this contest. And, you know, I have to thank for the competition. You know, I had an economics A-level teacher at my high school, you know, and I didn't go to a fancy, I went to, you know, like a state high school in Canada that was, you know, fairly academic. I grew up in a middle-class family. You know, my father was an engineer, worked for a big company as an executive, but he didn't own the company. And so there was no one really in my family that came out of the investment banking or brokerage business or being an investor.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because at 16, they're teaching these classes in Canada, right? I don't think we really learn too much about finances, at least in the U.S., about anything related to this. And maybe until you get to, you know, becoming an MBA in college, it's not something that you learn that early on. So that's interesting that they're doing that at, you know, an early age in Canada.
No, definitely, definitely. And I think what's interesting is that in high school, when we were in that economics class, they taught us to enter this competition and they taught us all the basics. But, you know, we had to self-educate ourselves. There was no basis for us to really learn and be educated. It was a lot of self-taught. You know, I went and bought books and I educated myself. And, you know, and I believe people can educate themselves. People can buy books. They can go online now. I think today it's never better. Yeah. It's so much easier today, as you know. I mean, we didn't have podcasts. We didn't have online portals where you can get books and newsletters and magazines. We live in like an age of information. You know, technology is everything. There's so much information at your fingertips. When I was growing up, we're talking, you know, I'm now 47. So 31 years ago, when I was in this stock market competition, you had to go to a library or you had to go to like a Chapters or a Barnes and Noble and buy a book physically. You had to read newspapers. There was no internet to search. Like I can go now and I can watch Ray Dalio, you know, give all these tips. I can go and find every expert out there has social media channels. So you've got, you know, all the channels. You've got Google. You can get books. You can get white papers. Everybody, it's all out there. Robinhood, all these platforms are educating traders. So when people say it's hard to learn today, they're just not looking in the right places.
Yep. It's funny because that's what I talk about mostly on the podcast, because I came from nothing and I'm doing what I'm doing right now. And it all stemmed from education. I would walk to the library, but I always say technology has bridged the gap from what people say hindered us from 20, 30 years ago. That is no longer an excuse on why you can't be successful, because you have YouTube. You have the library's been free. It's going to always be free. So you can always go to the library and get 100% extra content. So you hit it right in the head.
Same with the internet. You can get any white paper. Like I wanted to. So I'm doing a metaverse deal now, just to put it in perspective. I'm working on a metaverse project and I don't know anything. What do I know about the metaverse? My kids wear Oculus Quest goggles and I know about VR from what I saw. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go and search. Literally in an hour, I had 15 white papers from people like JP Morgan, Accenture, Ernst & Young, companies, everything, 50 articles. I spent a weekend, basically 10 hours reading and educating myself. Right. And now all of a sudden I'm immersed in it. And, you know, 30 years ago, you couldn't do that. It was just impossible for you. And so the biggest thing that I hear from people from younger generations, especially, and, you know, and I mentor a lot of people that come from, you know, underprivileged backgrounds and come from what we call here in the UK, they're sort of living on the fringes, or, you know, they can't get a private school education or they can't go to university. And, you know, everybody likes to play the victim. You know,
they like to say,
I can't set up a business because I don't have money. It's easy for you because, you know, you come from money. And, you know, my parents came to Canada as immigrants. They came from after World War II, the Holocaust. There was no bloody money. They came with zero to Canada. They started from nothing, got an education, got a job. And, you know, today you can get student loans if you want to study. It's not a problem. Okay. Right. But they even forgive student loans in America. Here they don't do that. You can go on the internet and find anything. You can create a business for like $2,000, $3,000 today. If you remember 10 years ago, you couldn't incorporate a company for $100 or $200. Correct. You couldn't build a website off of, you know, Wix or Square or all these websites. Now you can buy an off the rack website for $100, $200 and then host it hosting was, if you remember, $300-$400 a month. Now you can host $3-$4 a month.
Yep. It's $12 a year.
Phones are cheap, you know, now you can get a phone which you don't even need to have an office anymore. You get a virtual office. They scan your mail. They send it to you. So people can live this nomadic lifestyle. Correct. And be anywhere in the world and run a business remotely and digitally, which you couldn't do that 10 years ago.
Correct.
Or when I was starting out 20 years ago. So I think the world, it's actually, in my opinion, way easier for people
so much easier.
To create a business and scale it up.
I always say, if you don't get rich in the next 5 to 10 years, it's because you don't want to get rich, because there's so many, if not rich, financially independent, either one, like you'll have enough money to do whatever you want to do because, like I said, technology has bridged the gap. So with that being said, what made you transition into the VC space? I know you did the investing side, but what made you want to fund companies?
You know, I was always interested in creating. I started myself as a founder, and I would start up businesses and create them and grow them and raise money for them. And then from there, you know, opportunity comes knocking on your door. People would come to me and say, I have this great opportunity. I have this great business. Do you want to get involved? And, you know, I consider myself an active venture capitalist. I'm different than most venture capitalists. So what the traditional VC model in Silicon Valley is, you know, we're going to go and throw money. We're going to throw at 100 deals money. Maybe we'll put an independent director on there. Maybe we'll give you a mentor or someone that will speak to you once so we can help you out. Mm-hmm. We get our hands dirty. So we come into the deal. We're not, you know, writing checks to own 1 or 2%. We want to own anywhere from 10 to 50% of the company.
Okay.
We consider ourselves partners. We don't consider ourselves a VC investor. So we follow the VC model, but the deals that we go into, we're extremely active. We're hands-on. We're bringing people to the table. We're there every day. I'm on the phone with CEOs every day. Just yesterday, a CEO of a company I helped take public 2.5 years ago, he flew into London just to see me and just to have dinner with me and ask me for my advice face to face and say, you know, what should I do? What's going on? You know, ask for advice. And so we're extremely hands-on. I'm always available. This isn't, you know, we're not like a once a week or once a month type mentor. People can reach me 24/7. I'm always there for the founders that I work with. So I transitioned into that. Really, I was always in that space because I come out as a founder and entrepreneur myself. Mm-hmm. So it was a natural transition for me.
Okay. So with that being said, you guys use the same model as regular VC firms, but what do you guys look for specifically as VCs when you invest in a company?
Okay, great. So I consider myself like an incubator and accelerator. So I consider myself, deals that we look for, they fit in like three shoe boxes, okay? The first type of deal we do, it's a pure startup, back of the envelope idea. It's somebody comes to me and says, Andre, you may come to me and say, hey, I've got this great idea to create a fintech company. It's going to be a SaaS platform to help people run their business more efficiently. I don't know what. You're going to come with this great idea and you're going to come to me and we're going to create a roadmap and we're going to create a plan of action to start the company up. We're going to choose, let's figure out what your brand is. Let's find you a trademark lawyer. Let's figure out where we're going to incorporate the company. What jurisdiction? Is it going to be in the US? So should it be in Delaware? Should it be Nevada? Should it be, you know, in Florida? Should it be in California? We're going to then figure out then which auditors and accountants are you going to bring to the table. Then we're going to get you a copywriter, a graphic designer. We're going to get you a photographer, a videographer. We're going to help create your investor materials. Then we're going to help you with your investor pitch. So we're going to help you perfect it. We're going to record you, film you, show you how you present, help improve your presentation. Now we're going to put a list together of who are your investors. We're going to go from your friends and family to your seed and angel, to your investment clubs, to your VCs, to your brokers, and then to an IPO. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to help you pitch your own network. And I force everyone I work with on a deal, I say, you have to pitch your own friends and family. And everyone's like, oh, I don't want to pitch my own friends and family. You know, always, you never want to go to your friends and family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I say to people, I say, how do you expect a stranger to give you money if your own friends and family won't give you money?
True.
I said, you know, that I say, I don't need you to raise $2 million or $1 million. Raise $100,000 or $50,000. You know, you should hear, have your friends and family will be honest with you. They're going to say, oh, this idea is terrible because A, B, C, D, E. A stranger is just going to say, oh, we're not interested or we don't have money to invest. You know, that's the easiest answer is we don't have any money to invest. So we'll help them on raising money and then we'll mentor them, walk them through. We'll help them with lead generation, social media, PR, IR, everything. And so those are my first shoebox are pure startups. And we call that's sort of a launch. It's got like, I think there's about 9 or 10 steps in the process and we walk them through all of that. Then my second type of deal is a company that you might have created the company 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years. You started, launched, but you hit like a brick wall or a glass ceiling. You just can't raise any more money. You've exhausted all avenues of being able to raise money and you're in a rut. And so sometimes you need someone from the outside to come in and look at it. And usually the problem is that you've become so used to telling your story in one way and presenting the story in one way that you're not presenting it in the best way possible. You're presenting it the best way for yourself. So we come in and we basically take the house apart and we put it back together. So it's almost like building blocks and rebuilding the story and the way you present it. And so we work very, very well at doing, I've done probably, I'd say half my deals are those type of deals. They fit in shoebox too. And they're companies that have existed for like 6 months to 2 years. And we come in and do like a massive restructuring. And then usually we help them raise money and then plan an IPO. And then my third deal, the last deal, which is probably about 20-30% of my deals recently. These are like mature companies, late stage businesses. They have revenue already. They tried to go public and they just failed. You know, and they failed for a number of reasons. They either tried to go into a shell and it didn't work out for them, or they tried to go public and they chose the wrong consultants, the wrong lawyer, the wrong auditor, the wrong investment bank or broker, or it was bad timing in the markets. Like now it could be, or you're in a what looks like a potential recession or the market's down, 20-30%. So it's just bad timing, you know? And so a lot of the deals I'm working on right now are where we come in and we help fix the situation. You know, I have a process and a roadmap I like to use and I find that it works for me and I can make it work for most deals that I do if they're, you know, in the sectors that I like. So those are the sort of three types of deals, really early stage companies that have just started out and I've launched already, and then late stage companies.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I wish I could get into real estate investing? You can change this as quickly or as slowly as you want to now. Imagine yourself networking and making new connections in real estate globally, or buying an investment property in a market or country that fits your needs. People do. They know what I'm talking about, and now you can too with InvestFar. Connect and join the network. Remote investing made safe and easy.
The reason why that's so amazing, I worked in Silicon Valley Bank for at least 2 years. I was a relationship advisor, so I worked with startups and growth companies, and no company as a venture capital firm ever did what you do to the level of what you're talking about right now. So that's amazing for you to take companies and do that from start to finish, because I'm pretty sure you nurture them all the way to possibly even IPO once you get them from the beginning, if they're good companies.
No, and that's our plan. So you hit it nail on, you hit it spot on. What we do is, and people say to us, well, how do you make money? We don't actually make money until the company is either sold or goes public. So if you think about it, we're buried in many of these deals for anywhere from 2 to 5 years, sometimes 7 years, it depends. Yeah. You know, it really depends. And so we're not taking fees. We're taking no fees.
Wow.
Any money or percentage of any money raised. I'm not putting my hand. People are shocked when I tell them I'm not putting my hand in any lawyers, auditors, accountants, bankers, any of the consultants, PR firms, IR firms. Everybody says to me, oh, refer me business and we'll take care of you. And I say, you know what? The way you can take care of me is by doing the best job possible for the company I introduce you to. Mm-hmm. I don't want kickbacks. I don't want money. I'd rather you give me a better deal for the portfolio company and you do a better job, because I own equity in the deal. I'm a partner. For me, the success of the company will make me money. So we take like a long-term view, if you think about it. It's not a short-term view. And sometimes a deal just fails. If a deal fails, imagine I could have worked now 3, 4, 5 years on a deal and I make zero now. I make nothing because the deal failed. So
just so you guys know, this does not exist. What they do, Thesis Capital, that's unheard of, which is amazing. So, I mean, if you guys are even interested, at least try to have the conversation. But I know from my own experience, because I have a tech company and I've been trying to get funded. So I understand. I've never experienced a VC firm that
I'd love to look at. Listen, we look at, we say to people say, oh, what do you charge? What do you make? I say, well, we don't charge anything. We're equity partners. So we come in, we take a piece of the company. And I say to people, it's a really simple business model. You know, Andre, it's a super simple business model. Give me the equity. We sign a share buyback agreement day one. So it says, if we don't raise you any money at the first stage, cancel the deal, take all the equity back. All you've lost is a little bit of time. But I'll tell you what, you've gained a lot because I've helped you tell your story better. I've packaged it. Now, if we raise you the private money and we raise you another round, great. And if we can't take you public because it's our fault, not your fault, we're not market conditions, then give us only half the stock. We don't deserve all the stock if we can't take you public. You know, and we've had a couple of situations where the deal, we couldn't raise money. We miscalculated. I'm not saying, you know, I don't have 100% strike rate like anyone else. You know, we get it right a lot more than we get it wrong, but we've made some mistakes and market's gone against us. And we've said, you know what? Take the stock back. We're sorry. We couldn't make it work. It didn't work out for us. And everybody moves on. And that, you know, and that's what happens. But, you know, I'd love to look, you know, every day I'm speaking with people about deals and people say to me always, you know, the thing is, well, send me an agreement or send me how your deal looks. And I say, well, I can't really do it because every deal is different.
Different, correct.
You know, it's like you asking me, I've got two boys, two kids. You know, my kids are total opposite. You know, and what do you do? You know, I don't know. Do you have kids?
I do. I have a son. So I get it. Yeah.
So I've got two. And you'll see when you have more kids, you'll see it's like they're polar opposite, my kids, you know? And,
exactly.
And that's the same with deals I do. Every CEO is different. Every deal is different, you know, but we're the same. We're here.
So that's interesting. I want to ask this question because you said, you kind of invest in, I don't want to say victim type of mentality or companies. There's a huge disparity in funding with minorities. So since 2017, 2.4% of the money invested has gone to minorities. And you remember in 2020 when they were throwing all these money at SPAC companies, only 1% of those funds went to Black founders. So what's the environment like for your company? Like you said, you invest in specific companies. So how does that look for you guys?
I look for minority-run companies or female CEOs because I'm a big believer, you know, and I was one of the first ones to go out there. I have, you know, a company that is, you know, run by African-American CEO, and it's going public on, you know, NASDAQ, and it's a gaming company. And I, you know, I spotted it right away. He's a fantastic CEO. And I have two female-led companies, which, you know, I'm involved in as well, which are fantastic. And, you know, I've done business, you know, one of my biggest success stories was in Africa, in Kenya. And so for me, I look at it like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it doesn't matter to me, you know, whether they're white or Black or female run or male run. You know, I'm a big believer in minority run companies and female CEOs, and I'm always looking for great opportunities. I would love to do more. I'm also a big believer. I'm mentoring someone right now who was in prison. And, you know, I'm very big into justice reform and helping people that want to turn their lives around and reform. And so I'm trying to get very active in like the justice tech space, which is a new hot space in America. Mm-hmm. It's people creating businesses to help reduce offender rates and reoffending as well. And it's become very big in Europe and big also in the US. And so I'm involved in that space too. So I'm always looking for, you know, great opportunities. And for me, I don't have, you know, one size fits all. You know, I'll look at any deal. It doesn't matter who's running it or where it comes from.
This is amazing. Man, you're like one of the greatest VCs I've ever met. And I've met a lot. So this is,
good.
I mean,
a pleasure to meet you. You know, honest, it's a pleasure to meet you. And so you're doing great stuff as well. And, you know, and I'd love to be involved in whatever you're buying.
You guys, man, this is like hitting a gold mine just because there's not too many VCs out here that approach investing in companies the way he does and the way he's talking about. So anybody that's a minority listening, you might want to try to figure out how to schedule a meeting with him. And obviously we're going to give his information toward the end of the podcast. But my next question is, what are your type of companies based on your background? What companies do you like investing in? And I'm going to assume oil based on what I saw in your resume. You have invested
in oil. I started originally in the tech space, and then tech fell apart in, you know, 2001, 2002. And so just by chance, I was living in Vancouver. I got active in the oil and gas and mining space. And for 7 years, 8 years, I just knocked it out of the park. I had huge successes in that space. And then, you know, I had an exit. I had a company in Africa that I merged and became a really big company. I had a big success story. I moved back to the UK because my wife's British. I went back to school, did my MBA, and I was going to do my PhD and be a professor and teach in business school. And somehow I got involved in biotech, in university spin-out companies, working with academics. And from there, I got involved in biotech and medtech and fintech and edtech and gaming and software like SaaS, software as a service. And now I'm even involved in direct-to-consumer and, you know, metaverse stuff. So, I mean, I'm sector agnostic. I will work with any hot sector that's interesting. Everything I do, people say to me, how can you work with so many sectors? You know, I do the same thing. I'm looking for innovative, dynamic, disruptive founders, people that have great ideas, that want to change the world, that want to do something great. It doesn't matter to me what sector I'm involved in. It just, I'm looking for people. I back people with great ideas and people that are not creating a business to make money. They're thinking, here's a problem and here's my solution. That's what I'm looking for.
I like it, man. That is perfect. With that being said, what kind of advice do you have for anyone looking to raise funds and even come work with you?
No, my advice is don't be afraid of rejection. It's a numbers game. You know, pitch people. Listen, try and perfect your pitch. Perfect your investor materials. Make sure your story comes across easy for everyone to understand. Keep it simple. Yeah. Too many times people complicate things. You know, and I say to people, keep it really simple. Keep the model. If you can't explain in 20 seconds or in one or two sentences what you do, then people are not going to buy into your story. So make sure you can explain it properly. Be focused. Be really good at one or two things. And don't try and be a jack of all trades, master of nothing. People appreciate people that are focused. Pitch to a lot of people. Do not be afraid to reach out and ask people. Cold call people. Email them. Be a hustler. Hustle. If you pitch 100 people and two of them say yes, I know you're looking at a 98% failure rate. But that 2% could be $2, $3 million. It could be everything. It could be a turnaround. Don't be afraid to ask people for help, to mentor you, to guide you. Go reach out to successful people that have a similar story or background like you have, you know, and say, you've done a great job. You've been successful. How can I, you know, achieve success? Can you mentor me? Can you help me? Do not be afraid to ask people for advice. Think out of the box. Go on podcasts. Take on interviews, you know, speak to people, go to conferences, network. There's a lot of ways that you can go out and make yourself available and grow your business and scale it up and find investors without having to get a broker or investment bank involved, you know? So just be aggressive and don't be afraid of rejection. That's what I say to people. It's okay to fail and it's okay to be turned down.
So I know people are going to reach out to you. If they don't, you know, it wouldn't make sense why they wouldn't, because it's not like you're asking for money up front, right? You only get paid if they get paid, essentially, in the end.
Yeah, I'll look at any deal. You know, reach out. You know, you'll find on my website. You can put my website on after the podcast, and I've got a contact form. If you want to reach me, send in there your details. And, you know, I'm happy to take a discovery call with anyone with an exciting idea. You never know. If I tell you I found some of my best deals in the craziest ways. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Do you have what's your minimum investment that you guys were willing to do? And I guess what's your max in terms of funding companies?
We don't really have a minimum max. And my sweet spot is, you know, my sweet spot is private companies that are looking to raise up to 5 million privately and then plan for an IPO a year or two or 3 years down the road. And my sweet spot is like the $10 to $50 million IPO. And I like to look at companies that are either pre-revenue or a little bit of revenue and they have like, you know, 1 to 20 employees. If the company's too big and has too much revenue and they've already hit, you know, like a hockey stick growth, then they're going to go to a venture capital firm or an investment bank bigger than me. I know my place in the totem pole. You know, I'm sort of that smaller player dealing with the smaller companies that are either too small for some venture capitalists or too big for like an angel investor or a seed investor. So we're sort of like in the middle frack. And, you know, we found, you know, we're a niche player in that space. And, you know, we've built a really good business over the years by being, you know, big in that space.
So then I know you were in energy and you just mentioned that, you know, oil companies and how you're working with people in Africa. My last question for you is now as regards to the global economy. Since you're in the UK and you're tapped into the US, what's your thoughts on the energy crisis that's going on right now in the Europe?
The disaster, and it's not going to get any better. I mean, Russia is going full speed ahead on Ukraine. Doesn't look like Putin's going to slow down anytime soon. I mean, it is just, we're in for a rude awakening. You can see now Saudi Arabia, you know, lowered their production by 2 million barrels, which is, you know, has to drive prices up. Yeah. Russia, you know, with this Nord Stream pipeline, you know, issue going offline, it's just like a perfect storm for energy prices. I'm surprised they haven't gone up more, especially with all the problems in America. You've got hurricanes and flooding. I mean, it's literally, you go across the U.S. to every disaster possible now. The economy, inflation, mortgage rates, the stock market, floods, hurricanes, the political situation, you know, with, you know, nobody knows even who's going to be in government next in the U.S. It's a joke. It's literally a tsunami of financial Armageddon going on. And here in Europe, it's a disaster. You know, we have a government that took one decision on fiscal policy and then did a total turnaround. I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on in the UK. We actually have, you know, a black chancellor. He's like the Secretary of Treasury. And the papers here are so ridiculous. They put a picture of, did you see that in America? They put a picture of an American Citibank banker.
It's
like ridiculous. He's the number two guy in government and you don't even know how he looks like. What he looks like. I mean, what a ridiculous thing. That basically sums up this country. This country is a joke, honestly. Mm. And the policy that's going on in the UK is a joke. Energy prices are crazy. I mean, my house, it used to cost me $2,000 to $3,000 to heat my home over the year. It's now going to be like $20,000 or something. It's ridiculous. I had to shut my underfloor heating off because, can you imagine paying $2,000 a month to heat your house instead of like $300 or $250? It's ridiculous. Imagine now you're like on benefits, or what we call here benefits is like welfare in America. Mm-hmm. Or let's say you have a blue collar job. You work on like the subway as a driver, or you work for a company and you're making 40, 50 grand a year. How are you supposed to pay your bills?
Right.
You know, food prices are, I don't know how they are in the States.
Oh, no.
That's crazy. Mortgage rates have gone from like 2-3% to like 6.5% a year now.
It's funny because I talk about all this stuff all the time and you're confirming what I said and you're there. You're on the ground. I see it. But they get to hear directly from the source.
I see it too.
Right? You're right there. So I always say that I think what you see in Europe is going to eventually make its way to the U.S. Do you feel the same way?
I think it's already in the U.S.
I think it's there too.
I think we're in a situation now where the economy, there's a small group of people that have made a lot of money. I think that the masses are in trouble. I think the younger generation, the only reason a lot of them will survive is because they've not bought real estate. They've rented. So they don't have big mortgages and there's not going to be as many foreclosures as there were in 2008. It was harder to buy real estate after the financial crisis in the past, let's say 13, 14 years. So I think there's not going to be as many foreclosures. And I think also the courts, like in the UK, they're going to freeze evictions and foreclosures. You can see it already. That's what happened during the pandemic and it's going to happen again. They're not going to want every day in the paper, people to say, I've been thrown out of my home where I can't pay for my energy prices, energy bills, et cetera. So I think the government's going to try and intervene and that's just going to throw the currency. I mean, look at the dollar. It's almost par with the pound now.
Yeah, man, I swear you hit everything. I talk about this all the time. So it's great to hear someone like yourself, you know, at your level that's in this sector, telling everyone that we always hear like it's real. It's very real.
It is very real. And, you know, I'm happy to come on anytime, you know, have me as a guest anytime. And, you know, any help you need, you know, I'm happy to come on. And, you know, I really enjoyed time on this podcast. The questions were really good.
I'm bringing you back. I want to bring you back. It was great to talk about the whole VC section, but we're going to dive more into the economy. But real quick, we're running out of time. Give us your information on how people can reach out to you and connect and try to get funded.
Yeah, people can find me on social media. You know, my Instagram is at Ron Bauer, RONBAUER 888. My Twitter is the same, RONBAUER 888. My LinkedIn is the same. My website is thescapital, thescapital.com. And people can go and find information about how to work with me, how to approach me. I'm very approachable. Send me your deal, reach out. I'm happy to give advice, help people, happy to jump on a call and hear your story. And if it works, you know, great. And if not, you know, best of luck.
Thank you for coming on, Ron. You will be on again soon. And I'll definitely be in touch with you myself. Thank you again.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for. In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others.
go to residualroads.com. For mentorship and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.